I told you when we got back, we'd be talking about some of the best neighbors in the whole state of Arizona. And boy, Sanderson Ford's right at the top of the list for that, for all of you. In Glendale, 67 years, family-owned, operated 64 acres of beautiful Ford vehicles. I ran over there just last week and worked with Mr. Jason. I said, Jason, put me in one of those Ford Rangers. So one of our superintendents got a brand new XLT Ford Ranger, white, of course, to match every other white truck we've got on the road. And I just had a ball driving that truck across town. It just so responsive, so easy to weave in and out of traffic and park. I love it.
And this is like the first Ranger of all the Ford vehicles in the business and family fleet.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. We're always in 150s, 250s, or bigger. And this was a little hoot to drive, I'll tell you. I hope my superintendents all love them, because it's my plan to put them all in that little rig.
You know, the one thing I've always liked about them is the ease of access in and out for your tools from the job site. You know, sometimes on the bigger trucks, you can't reach the middle.
Almost
impossible. From standing on the ground, unless you're like, you know, you got like a 6'4 wingspan or something.
Exactly. So being good neighbors is something Sanderson Ford has been doing for a long, long time. If you're in the market for a new vehicle or a good certified used vehicle, get over to Sanderson Ford on 51st Avenue, just south of Glendale. And I promise you, you'll thank me for that.
Hi. It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
This is the Rose on the House topic of the week. It's easy to be a good neighbor. You can get to our website, rosieonthehouse.com. Or as a subscriber to our email newsletter, you've already gotten it in your email box on Thursday. It's easy to be a good neighbor. And we list some of the things involved in being a good neighbor. And it's kind of distressing when you look at some research conducted by the Pew Research Center. It says that 4 in 10 rural residents say they know most of their neighbors. 40% of rural homeowners know their neighbors. And it only gets worse in the city. Goes all the way down to 24%. Don't even know who their neighbors are. So the first thing we would encourage you to do is get out there and meet your neighbor. And we're here talking about good neighbors with Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University. Dr. Dean, again, thank you. And you've got some particularly outstanding examples of some good Arizona neighbors.
Well, and you know, you never know who your neighbors are until you get out and meet them. Like, for example, with Giovanni Vigliotto, the guy that married 105 wives.
Did they all live with him?
No, over the years, he defrauded a number of women of their property, and then he would move on and went on trial for that eventually, 28 counts of fraud and that kind of stuff. But you never know who your neighbors are.
What's his connection to Arizona?
Well, several of the women that he defrauded were Arizona residents. So a person in Mesa, he actually went on trial in Tucson and died in prison here in Arizona.
So okay.
Yeah, so he's kind of connected to us. But there, you know, you talk about neighbors and creating neighborhoods and those things. And one of the biggest examples that I see, an Arizonan who created neighbors across the country, was Ernest McFarland and the GI Bill. The Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, known as the GI Bill, provided three things for 6 million veterans coming home from World War II. One, it provided educational benefits for them to go to trade school, to go to college, and go beyond in order to develop education. They also provided loans for those who wanted to just come home and go straight into business. And it provided VA loans, low-interest homeowner loans for veterans to purchase homes, which sparked that huge housing boom of the 1950s and all the suburbia and all those kind of things. It created a middle class of neighbors and people moving out of the cities and in, out of apartments and things to suburbs and to those little cookie cutter kind of houses and things that we see everywhere. And that readjustment act, that GI Bill, he created neighbors by creating this opportunity for this middle class of wealthy, you know, people to have money in their pocket and to be able to own a home and send their kids to school and have good jobs and get an education and things. And just a phenomenal piece of legislation written by our own Ernest McFarland, who was a senator, a representative, and he also served as governor of Arizona. And so he's a fantastic neighbor creator.
And he was a World War One vet.
Yes, he was a World War One veteran, and his, part of his experience when he came home from World War One, of course, the veterans that came home were promised pensions, but when the Great Depression happened, a lot of them were left out in the cold. In fact, a bonus army, they called it, marched on Washington to demand their bonuses, demand their pensions during the Hoover administration, and so he went through that experience and said, we've got to do a better job of bringing those soldiers back and readmitting them into society. And so his plan, the GI Bill, spread those 6 million out so we didn't hit that and create a big unemployment gap by displacing people, because it, again, some could start businesses and immediately go to work. Some would go to trade schools. Some would go to four-year colleges. And as they became business owners, as they became employees, as they started to develop their careers, the first thing they did in that baby boom era was they got married, bought a house, and had kids. And that created those suburb explosions of the 1950s.
And this bonus army that marched on Washington,
mm-hmm.
name the generals that put that down.
I think it was Eisenhower and MacArthur.
It was General MacArthur and Eisenhower. And Patton apparently was there as well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, Eisenhower going on to be president of the United States, you could see how he would be supportive of, again, a program that's going to help veterans out. Because he was a veteran himself, and he saw what that experience was, and so he's going to be very supportive of the VA loan programs and things that are going to help build those homes and that prosperity. Every one of those homes not only had innovations in their technology, but they needed to have appliances put in them and furnishings and carpeting and all that stuff, and not all had to be manufactured and with new technologies and new products and materials, all being developed by recent college graduates in engineering programs and science programs that had gone to school on the GI Bill. You can see how it just multiplies that middle class and created all those neighbors, again, moving out to those places. We would not have the America that we have today without that GI Bill.
Three-bedroom, two-bath ranch.
$2,800.
For $2,800 in the good old days, the developers would build out the entire subdivision.
That's not even a down payment.
No, it isn't.
You'd have
it
to
isn't.
Add three zeros to that, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
They would build the entire subdivision out in the late 50s and 60s. You could not buy a home in a subdivision until it was completely done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they got such huge economies of scale. No changes, no customizing, nothing. We're going to open the gates, and we're going to give you little red soul tags. And you're going to run to the house that you want to hang your soul tag on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do it all at 6 o'clock in the morning on July 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And they would open these gates, and literally thousands of people carrying soul tags would be running through the neighborhood hanging soul tags on. And then, guy, that's, you know, that's how Del Webb.
Del Webb and John F. Long.
John F. Long.
You know, established Maryvale was kind of John F. Long's big contribution. And John F. Long also, one of the things in the mass production of those homes, he started building the trusses off-site,
yeah,
and then trucking them in and developed, I think it's the brace, the that metal bracket that braces the angles.
Yeah.
That was part of his innovations, because then they could pre-manufacture those trusses and bring them on and just hang them on the block walls and put those houses up much faster. So pretty incredible kind of stuff there.
Yeah, I don't think John F. Long gets quite the credit he deserves for what he did for the housing industry, particularly in Maricopa County, because he did begin to introduce the idea of component construction. And he built his masonry homes of the 60s to this day are still homes of solid bones. He built a good home.
During that boom period of time, and let's say 1957 to 1967, over 500,000 homes were built in Phoenix. And I dare say that 85% of them are still standing. The only thing that takes them down is a freeway coming through or an accidental Christmas tree fire. I mean, they're so solidly built. And you can drive around neighborhoods and see them. The ones with you see the weeping mortar on some of
them.
That's right. You see they're all ranch styles. You see the old metal windows that people are out trying
steel frame, single pane glass, and casement windows.
They're all about 1,100 to 1,300 square feet. They might have a one-car garage. I mean,
or carport.
Our carports,
yeah.
and they were designed to be kind of uniform, and then people could come back and customize them later on. That was why they didn't have a whole lot of options. It kept the cost down, but then over time, people could upgrade their kitchen if they wanted to, but sometimes you actually find homes that still have those original kitchens.
Oh, you do. Absolutely.
With the Formica countertops and the little silver trim on them and the small spot for the stove. And, you know, you still see the small bathrooms and the honeycomb tile and the subway tile on the walls and stuff. I mean, you can characteristically see those homes throughout the valley.
And today, when we see those homes, we're generally tearing the wall out between the kitchen and the family living, what was then the living room, dining room, and we're just creating one great grand space, opening those homes up. And ironically enough, there seems to be a trend of people now reducing those grand open spaces and putting it back into mini habitat areas where you could have a school area over here, a home office over here,
sure,
a family gathering area over in the other corner. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole housing trend goes in the next decade.
Sure. And you did a show just a few weeks ago about some of the larger examples had those sunken living rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And you did a great show on people filling in those and the complexity of that that was really good. People want to fill in those sunken living rooms.
Yeah, you know? We thought it was a great idea in the 60s for sunken living rooms and sunken garden tubs in the master bath. Ooh, big premium upgrades, baby.
What about the planters underneath a leaky skylight?
Oh, you know,
The stone planter that everybody trips over now. Are they fill it in with a piece of plywood so that they can set stuff on it or whatnot?
Exactly. Yeah, those atrium skylights in the middle of the living room. We just filled one in McCormick Ranch just a couple months ago and added a nice big old, actually doubled the size of the kitchen by eating that thing up and making it go away.
And you know, John F. Long, you mentioned, doesn't get a lot of credit, but, you know, establishing Maryvale, building 30,000 homes, creating a community there that has churches and has high schools and has parks and golf courses and all those things, that was kind of the place to live in the 1950s and the 1960s. That was where middle class Arizonans were going to, and then they were going to work out at Goodyear or in some of the other manufacturings at Intel and Motorola and those kind of plants and things. I mean, it's really a footprint of this, the prosperity of the 1950s that was generated by McFarland's GI Bill.
Good neighbors. Good neighbors, a big part of being a good neighbor is knowing your neighbor. When we get back, let's talk a little bit about getting over your hesitation at going next door and knocking on the door and introducing yourself.